The police, of course. They see me. But slow, now, slow. Quiet. Don't turn. Don't look. Don't seem concerned. Walk. That's it. Walk. Walk. The beetle was rushing. The beetle was roaring. The beetle raised its speed. The beetle was whining. The beetle was in high thunder. The beetle came skimming. The beetle came in a single whistling trajectory, fired from an invisible rifle. It was up to 120 miles per hour. It was up to 130 at least. Montag clamped his jaws. The heat of the racing headlights burnt his cheeks, it seemed, and jittered his eyelids and flushed the sour sweat out all over his body. He began to shuffle idiotically and talk to himself, and then he broke and just ran. He put out his legs as far as they would go, and down and then far out again, and down and back and out and down and back. God! God! He dropped a book, broke pace, almost turned, changed his mind, plunged on, yelling in concrete emptiness, the beetle scuttling after its running food. 200, 100 feet away, 90, 80, 70, Montag gasping, flailing his hands, legs up, down, out, closer, closer, hooting, calling. His eyes burnt white now as his head jerked about to confront the flashing glare. Now the beetle was swallowed in its own light. Now it was nothing but a torch hurtling upon him. All sound, all blare. Now, almost on top of him, he stumbled and fell. I'm done. It's over. But the falling made a difference. An instant before reaching him, the wild beetle cut and swerved out. It was gone. Montag lay flat, his head down. Wisps of laughter trailed back to him with the blue exhaust from the beetle. His right hand was extended above him, flat. Across the extreme tip of his middle finger, he saw now, as he lifted that hand, a faint 1/16 of an inch of black tread where the tire had touched in passing. He looked at that black line with disbelief, getting to his feet. That wasn't the police, he thought. He looked down the boulevard. It was clear now. A car full of children, all ages, God knew, from 12 to 16, out whistling, yelling, hurrahing, had seen a man, a very extraordinary sight, a man strolling, a rarity, and simply said, "Let's get him," not knowing he was the fugitive Mr. Montag. Simply a number of children, out for a long night of roaring 500 or 600 miles in a few moonlit hours, their faces icy with wind, and coming home or not coming at dawn, alive or not alive, that made the adventure. "They would have killed me," thought Montag, swaying, the air still torn and stirring about him in dust, touching his bruised cheek. "For no reason at all in the world, they would have killed me." He walked toward the far curb, telling each foot to go and keep going. Somehow he'd picked up the spilled books. He didn't remember bending or touching them. He kept moving them from hand to hand, as if they were a poker hand he could not figure. "I wonder if they were the ones who killed Clarice." He stopped, and his mind said it again, very loud. "I wonder if they were the ones who killed Clarice!" He wanted to run after them, yelling. His eyes watered. The thing that had saved him was falling flat. The driver of that car, seeing Montag down, instinctively considered the probability that running over a body at such a high speed might turn the car upside down and spill them out. If Montag had remained an upright target? Montag gasped. Far down the boulevard, 4 blocks away, the beetle had slowed, spun about on 2 wheels, and was now racing back, slanting over on the wrong side of the street, picking up speed. But Montag was gone, hidden in the safety of the dark alley, for which he had set out on a long journey an hour, or was it a minute, ago. He stood shivering in the night, looking back out as the beetle ran by and skidded back to the center of the avenue, whirling laughter in the air all about it, gone. Further on, as Montag moved in darkness, he could see the helicopters falling, falling, like the first flakes of snow in the long winter to come. The house was silent. Montag approached from the rear, creeping through a thick, night-moistened scent of daffodils and roses and wet grass. He touched the screen door in back, found it open, slipped in, moved across the porch, listening. "Mrs. Black, are you asleep in there?" he thought. This isn't good. But your husband did it to others and never asked and never wondered and never worried. And now, since you're a fireman's wife, it's your house and your turn for all the houses your husband burned and the people he hurt without thinking. The house did not reply. He hid the books in the kitchen and moved from the house again to the alley and looked back, and the house was still dark and quiet, sleeping. On his way across town, with the helicopters fluttering like torn bits of paper in the sky, he phoned the alarm at a lonely phone booth outside a store that was closed for the night. Then he stood in the cold night air waiting, and at a distance he heard the fire sirens start up and run, and the salamanders coming to burn Mr. Black's house while he was away at work, to make his wife stand shivering in the morning air while the roof let go and dropped in upon the fire. But now she was still asleep. Good night, Mrs. Black, he thought. Faber. Another rap, a whisper, and a long waiting. Then, after a minute, a small light flickered inside Faber's small house. After another pause, the back door opened. They stood looking at each other in the half-light, Faber and Montag, as if each did not believe in the other's existence. Then Faber moved and put out his hand and grabbed Montag and moved him in and sat him down and went back and stood in the door, listening. The sirens were wailing off in the morning distance. He came in and shut the door.